Hey there, it's Megan Segura.
And it's Rachel Roberts.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast. Apologies, everyone, that we missed last week.
And apologies, we didn't tell you we weren't going to be there. Double apology.
It was a lot. We were getting ready for the Labor Day weekend.
Right, right. You're making excuses.
I'm sorry, a housewife's apology.
I don't know what you're doing. Well, we have no excuses. We take ownership.
And we have no excuse for the following, which is that we're going to be dark next week, too.
Right.
But then we'll be back the week after that.
But that's why this episode is so good, I promise.
Yes. Okay, because we need to talk about part two and part three of The Real Housewives of New York City reunion. Bananas.
Yes. Part two and three and the Watch What Happens Live with Luann.
Right. Luann speaks.
Yes.
And we have a new segment we're bringing to you guys. Some of our diehard fans might remember Eric J. Mack from the most Erika Jayne moment of the week. Well, he's back with a new segment. We're going to let him tell you all about it a little bit later in the episode.
Yes. And we also interviewed some people this week. We have Gigi from Shaw's, Golnessa Garasha Dagi.
Very nice.
Yes, I tried. We interviewed Sezen Cavusoglu, who is a Bravo executive here that brought us maybe like one of the most iconic moments of The Real Housewives of New Jersey of all time.
Yeah.
And I interviewed just yesterday Quad Webb Lunsford in one of the most emotional interviews I've ever conducted. Mm-hmm. It was really, really intense, as you can all imagine, considering not only did this week the Married to Medicine premiere with that huge scandal with Dr. G, but also she has announced her divorce.
And she gets into it. Mm-hmm. And of course, we'll wrap things up with Rose and Thorn.
Yes. But first up, we have News No Booze, currently this week. Maybe we'll have booze later. Where we're going to talk about the biggest headlines, everything you need to know about what's happening in the Bravo universe this week, which a lot happened over the weekend.
So, producer Nicole, take it away.
All right, our biggest piece of news, Lala Kent is engaged, guys.
I was shocked I saw the news.
So, full disclosure, you know how we always ask housewives, like, what text groups are you in? We're all in a group together.
Yeah.
Where we discuss Bravo celebrity things.
Mm-hmm.
Someone sent this to me, and I literally died.
Right. Were they in Mexico when they got engaged?
Yeah. So on September 1st, they got engaged in Cabo.
Ooh. Of course. And the ring is $150,000.
What?
Huge. 18 karat gold, 6 carats of diamonds, circular shape, and it was custom designed by Randall and, you know, the famous jeweler, Richie Rich.
Mm.
They got that all together.
Whoa.
18 carats.
Whoa.
For all those people who said he wouldn't marry her.
Right.
Boy, did they get it wrong.
Right. First of all, I mean, this is just such a lot of information. Because do you remember the time when we didn't even know who he was and we weren't allowed to discuss it?
Couldn't say who he was. Yeah. Right.
So it's just like, what a new world.
Yeah. The first thing that went through my mind was, will Brittany and Jax feel like she's stealing their thunder?
Yes, just like Rachel and Monica.
Right.
Well, I think the most like romantic part is that Randall asked for her dad's permission before he passed in April.
Aww.
That I really
oh, am. No.
Yeah. She's about to cry.
I know, I am. That is just like, you know what I'm going to say? Based on our conversations with her, which everyone should go back and listen to our interviews with Lala, it's like real. They like have a real love match. I think she really loves him and I think he really loves her.
Right.
Real love. Speaking of true love, Kim Richards is finally going public with her boyfriend of 6 years.
Six years.
I can't believe it.
I read that headline and was like, what? Is that a miscalculation?
So someone other than me do the math. 6 years ago was what year of Beverly Hills?
Well, we'd be season two, right?
Season two of Beverly Hills?
I don't know. I mean, if I'm going back 6 years.
That's bananas. If it is season two,
it may be later than that.
I think it's season three, because season three is 2012 to 2013.
But still.
That's crazy. Yeah.
That is crazy.
That's early.
That he's been there since then?
Yeah, because I'm thinking of that really creepy guy she dated in season two. Remember when like she and him showed up late to the vacation?
Yes.
In Hawaii?
Right.
And they kind of like missed all these events. Mm-hmm. And then we found out later it's because she was having issues.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. I will never forget that season finale.
So yeah, I guess he's the boyfriend after that guy.
Right. But he's been around for all of this.
All of it.
Wow. All right, some info on her boyfriend.
Yes, please.
Oh, you have info. Oh, good.
Yes, I do. At the 411, he's a businessman, and his name is Wynn Katz. And they made their public debut on the premiere of Marriage Bootcamp, Reality Stars. So big reveal.
So I'm not familiar, unfortunately, with Marriage Bootcamp. We have a photo. We have a photo. It's very graphic, I would say, is the word I would use.
He's kissing her on the cheek.
There is a feeling of love.
Lust.
Pleasure. I think that is very emits from the photograph.
Don't say pleasure.
Pleasure.
He's a silver fox.
Silver fox. Sure. Yes, yes. She looks happy.
Very happy.
Say that. I'm not familiar with Marriage Bootcamp, but presumably you go on because you're having issues.
Yeah, Gretchen and Slade have been on it.
Ah. So you don't need to be married is also what I'm gathering.
Right, yeah. It's for
a couple.
Plethora of issues. Sometimes it's more about like your family's involvement in your relationship. So, yeah.
Interesting. I wonder what happened. Yeah. Do we have any details on the episode?
Oh, that he said that she's not sexy enough for him. I just saw that headline.
I have never heard more false words in my whole life. You know what I think of when I think of Kim Richards? That one cheetah really tight dress.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
also, she dated Donald Trump.
Right.
So if she's sexy enough for the leader of the free world.
At least we forget. Well, yeah, I'd say there's a major problem if he's saying that. Anyway, now I don't know what I think. I was happy based on that photo, but now I don't know. Saying that mess.
All right, guys, that's all the news I have for you.
Two great pieces.
So then we should get into what we've been waiting to talk about for literal weeks.
Yes.
Which is The Real Housewives of New York City Season 10 Reunion Parts 2 and 3!
You guys, it's like our Super Bowl. I mean, truly.
We talked a lot as we were watching this reunion. I think we were both watching it separately at our desks and a multitude of times stood up and were like, wait, what do you think about this?
I know. Usually we try to like not talk to each other because we're like, leave it for the podcast, but this we just kept popping up being like, but what do you think? This is ridiculous.
So we kind of like, there's so much, so we kind of put our biggest takeaways from the reunion.
Yes.
First, let's start with Andy's role in the reunion this year.
Maybe most active I've seen him.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly wanted to talk about this because I saw how much fans were talking about it on social media, and they really felt like Andy was taking Bethany's side throughout the whole reunion. And I definitely see where they're coming from, but I also think it's hard for him because he's trying to be the voice of us, right? Like of the fan who, if someone is saying, this didn't happen, and he's like, no, I watched it happen. So when Carol says, I never said anything bad about Bethany, and he's like, you guys bashed each other.
And then she said,
I didn't bash anyone, Andy.
Right. You're so full of shit, Andy. I think were the exact words.
You bashed each other on the show.
I'm so full of shit.
We bash each other on the show.
I didn't bash her on the show.
Which is crazy.
Right.
I don't think anyone has been that combative with Andy. I think there have been moments where he got in the middle of it, but like directing their anger at Andy.
Right.
I don't think so.
Except for maybe Brandi Glanville in Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Right.
When she said, it was in season 5 reunion, and she said, "F*** you." Because he made an analogy comparing her to a dog, which is actually pretty innocent, but she just was not in a place to hear it.
Right.
Forgive the comparison, but it's almost like you're playing with your dog and all of a sudden your dog bites you by mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. You.
No, but I know. I mean, it's
what
like.
What is that?
You're playing and then it goes one step too far.
No.
No?
No, that's bullshit. You don't say that. I've taken enough abuse since I've been here. I'm not going to take it from you two.
I'm actually making
playing
your
with
point.
My, it's
playing
an with analogy. Your dog.
If you're
it's
playing,
an analogy.
If you're frolicking with someone, if you're frolicking
it's
and then
an
someone gets hurt by mistake, I actually was defending you.
That was not a defense.
It's all where you are at the reunion. I'm not talking about on the couch, mentally.
Right. And of course, who can forget Teresa physically pushing him on the Real Housewives of New Jersey reunion?
You are strong.
She is strong.
You threw me up. I mean, you are really strong. You don't work out at all?
I haven't worked out.
Do you understand that you just threw me off of you? Like, very strong. Here's the thing. Just don't cross me. Okay?
I remember him talking about another reunion. Do you remember when she was wearing, like, that green dress?
Uh-huh.
He said that later on he had just, like, spray tan glitter, like, all over his arm because he kept, like, she kept, like, grabbing him.
Right.
Ugh, so good. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that he was really trying to hold, in Carol's own words, people accountable.
Right.
Like, he would really be digging into stuff. Like, he asked Dorinda several times, like, but
do you think you have a drinking problem? Right, yeah. Right.
So, I don't know. Also, it's like, you can't, he, at the end of the day, he's Andy Cohen.
He's also kind of the boss.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, he wins. He's the one that decides.
Yeah.
So, I was watching part three several times, and at one moment, Bethany says to Carol, get a hobby. And so, of course, my crazy brain immediately was like, that is what Bethany also said to Jill in season three during all of the mishigas that happened there.
Right, the infamous voicemail.
Yeah, okay. I think this is called a power play.
Okay, I want to move on.
You need a career.
The infamous voicemail, get a hobby.
You need to get a hobby. And then Jill's whole line, because she said it a few times that season, was, guess what? I did. And it didn't involve her.
Right. Such iconic words being brought up again at the reunion. I was just like so happy about it.
Well, so going off the comparison of her and Carol, her and Jill, which breakup is harder for you as a fan?
Oh, absolutely. Still Bethany and Jill.
Yeah.
Like, same. To the end of time.
Yeah. Because I think for me, Bethany and Carol always felt like housewives friends. They're friends because they were brought together on this show. But she and Jill seemed to have a much more...
I think that it was like also just a different time in their lives. Like, yeah. Bethany, I think, really went under her wing. And Jill's mom was such a big part of it, too. She really felt like she integrated into the family. Whereas I feel like Carol and Bethany were like friends.
Right.
It just seemed like a different level with Jill and Bethany. I don't know. Now that this also isn't epic, as evidenced by this three-part reunion where they cannot stand each other.
Well, I mean, what part do you think Dennis's death will play in where their friendship goes from here?
I wonder, because I didn't even think about that, but this was discussed a lot at the reunion, too. You know, like, Dorinda, what is your thing against Sonia? And all of that, and they were talking about Richard and everything. So I wonder, with Carol having, knowing that experience.
Right, what of it would losing be. Her husband.
Right. I don't know if, like, that would bring her together of, like, being able to bond over loss. I think it would be really hard for these two to move forward because I would say what the reunion was really just them eviscerating any kind of friendship that they had.
Right. I mean, okay, what did you think about the comparing of resumes?
I don't know. I know it's crazy because Bethany was like on the cover of Forbes and is like still wildly successful. But I do think that Carol's saying that, like, you can't say that I don't have a career because I'm a writer. I just wrote books. I did just write this article, Cosmo. Like, my career takes twists and turns. And, like, I don't know. I don't think it's you can say that she doesn't have a career.
Do you feel Bethany was career shaming her? Do you think career shaming is a thing?
You know what? In general, I'm going to talk about shaming a little bit. Because as I was watching it, I realized that there's this, like, line of, like, where does it start and where does it stop of just bringing up facts and when does it become shaming?
Right.
Because I think that was, like, the whole point of all of them. Because all of this argument is that both Bethany and Carol were just like, I'm just stating facts. I'm just stating facts. But are the facts kind? I think that's the question.
Right.
Like, the kindness is gone.
Right.
But back to your question, can you career shame? Yes, I think you can. Is that what happened?
I don't know, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about the part of the reunion that affected me most personally.
I'm so excited we're talking about this.
So, as digital producers, Rachel and I have a lot of things we do in our day-to-day jobs. But one of the things is we are responsible for getting those blogs out of the housewives' heads and out on the internet to you guys, right. Okay? And we take that seriously, right? It's
maybe the number one priority of my job.
Right. Mm-hmm. So for Carol to say only two people read them really hurt me?
Right.
On a personal level.
Like, literally, we get paid to make sure that more than two people.
So, Carol, based on the number of retweets and tweets about them that I see, I know that's not true. And I see the traffic, okay? And I'm just, you know, I won't disclose it. I won't disclose the actual numbers, but it's more than two, okay? And to this, I will say, when Carol said that she doesn't really care about writing the blogs, all I'm going to say is, I've seen something that points to the contrary. And that's it. That's where I'm leaving it.
Okay.
I'm a lady. Okay. The other thing that I want to get this across to everyone at home, being at the reunion taping, I can tell you the word narrative was used 50 times more than what was shown in what you guys saw each week. And that's why you see Bethany so frustrated and being like, pick another word.
Right.
I really thought that they were going to include them all because I came back to the office and I was like, get ready. Narrative is the drinking word.
Right, because I would say I definitely heard it, but I didn't hear it.
Oh, my God. So much. Okay. So much.
Something that I thought really hit home for me was getting new color to the infamous Luann Bush fall.
Oh. That was the best. Okay, so in part two, we learn that the tumble Luann takes in the bushes on that Mexico trip happened after Ramona off camera said to Luann, I know for a fact Tom is still cheating on you.
Right!
And so Dorinda was like, yeah, that's why she fell in the bushes.
Right, and he was like, wait, you're saying that she drank so much because of that conversation.
Right.
I can bring it up because of everything. Mm-hmm. But in Mexico, I told her things that I knew for a fact about Tom. And she's like, oh, my God, if Noel knew, don't tell anybody, because if Noel knew, he'd die. And I go, I'm not going to tell anybody, but you need to know this and deal with it.
You told her this off camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Mexico, before she fell. Maybe that's why she fell.
Well, she had also had 18 tequilas.
Why? Because she heard
to get
from
things
Ramona.
Off her
right.
Yeah.
Really? So
yeah.
Did she have a lot of tequila that night because of what you had told her?
I think
her,
so.
So, yeah, it definitely adds a different color to
right.
That.
I just, like, I feel like it just changes the whole thing. And it was such an iconic moment from last season.
Right.
I just loved hearing more details about that.
I don't know. On an overall level, what would you say about this reunion?
Well, I think I'm going to go back. This is just, like, something that I found. I feel like the kindness is gone from all
totally.
Of them.
Totally.
There's just no one. It's like we were saying. It's like saying facts that are true, but is that, like, the nice thing to say? And it's not shade either. It's not like I'm going to give you a little poke or be really shady because I don't like you. It's just this level of meanness we've reached.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think
the love is gone.
For me, I thought it was vicious, but I also just felt a lot of confusion in terms of why things were important to Carol. Like, certain things she really wanted to get across. Tinsley and I are not as close as it seems.
But, and that was also not kind. Like, now that
not
when
kind.
Tinsley was like, right. It hurts my feelings when you say that.
And then, of course, Dorinda really, and Carol being really upset about the Nutcracker. Again, like, I don't understand what that small detail had to do with the issues at large.
Right.
So viciousness and confusion is what I'm left with.
Yeah, I agree. But I also feel like a lot of people I've seen on the Twitterverse and the Instagram land.
Sure.
They keep being like, are you Team Bethany or Team Carol? And I always reply when people ask me, because I get a lot of tweets about it too, or like Instagram, and I'm like, neither. I think that they both have done stuff that hasn't been great. They both have been unkind to each other. And I think that, like, looking back, they'll A, both see that, and B, like, realize that, like, this doesn't make anyone, it's not a good look for anybody.
Right.
Like, nobody's coming out looking great. I think except for Sonia.
Yeah.
She, like, was actually, like, very gracious and, like, made sense.
Okay, so if we're going to play a hypothetical game and they come back for season 11.
Okay.
What do you think it's going to look like? I mean, we already know Carol's not coming back. But
right.
Let's say the rest do. Can there be a good season? after the craziness of this reunion?
Weirdly, even though, like, obviously Ramona has a lot of issues with Bethany, we saw that throughout the reunion. I feel like we can play, like, 15 times, and she's like, really, Bethany? Really?
Very disappointing as a woman. Really? You say you support women, obviously you don't. Well, Bethany.
Like, just over the top.
Yeah.
But I also think that that's not irreparable. Like, I actually think that they could be okay. And I think that if Carol were to stay on, it would cause this rift. But I think she'll be, things will mellow.
Yeah.
Because Dorinda's obviously open to it.
Right.
With that crying at the end.
Right. That's true. And I do think, you know, sadly, the death of Dennis will change the way people, you know, treat Bethany. I think she's very fragile right now.
Right.
So how could you not treat her with anything but compassion and love?
Right. And I think that if Dorinda's okay with her, Carol's not here anymore, Ramona, I think it'll be okay. And Sonia and Luann get along with her. And Tinsley, I think, is like, not everyone always gets along with everybody. So you don't need everybody.
Right.
Like, I actually think it'll be okay. I don't think that there'll be, it'll just be like our side and your side. I think it'll be a lot more complicated and a lot more interesting than that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm excited to see where it could go. So one reason this podcast is coming out a day later than usual is we wanted a chance to talk about Countess Luann's appearance on Watch What Happens Live. Because since she wasn't at the reunion, I think we were all sort of waiting to hear what she thought of everything.
Right, because a lot of the discussion revolved around Luann.
Totally.
So we just want to go through, like, Luann's reactions to everything.
Right. So the first being Dorinda talking about Cartagena, saying she was not intoxicated when she went after Luann about the mugshot, which you can see Luann visibly shaking her head like, no, that is absurd.
Right.
As they're playing that moment.
And then when Dorinda was like, she was forced into rehab, I wasn't. And Luann's like,
she
doesn't
understand.
Yeah. And Luann's like, she clearly doesn't know what she's talking about. I went of my own recognizance, which is like such a legally wonderful term that I'm so glad that she used.
I was not court ordered to go to rehab. I went on my own recognizance, first of all, so Dorinda doesn't know anything about me. I went because I felt that I needed to go and take care of myself. And I take it very seriously, my sobriety, and it's 51 days to date.
And she's just like, no, Dorinda, you're wrong. Which I want to also discuss maybe right now. At the end of, like, this little, the reunion they called on Watch What Happens Live, he asked, like, Dorinda says, you know, she thinks there's a glimmer of hope with you guys that you will get back together. What do you say?
And Luann's like, no, that's not my vision.
Right. Like, that's not how I see it at all.
Which I think is fair. I felt like, okay, so, you know, we saw Bethany and Carol saying horrendous things to each other. And then being like at the end, no, there's no coming back from this. And Dorinda being like, oh, well, I think Luann and I could. And I'm like, but Dorinda, like, you said some things that Luann may not be okay with.
Right. And I was really glad that Luann said that, because I will say, watching the reunion and Dorinda saying that over and over again, I did walk away being like, but Dorinda and Luann will be fine. Clearly they'll be fine. I think I even said that in, like, a recap we talked about. Like, so they'll be okay, but obviously not.
Yeah. Might take a little while.
Yeah. Oh, the part where she talks directly to Ramona.
Look at me, Ramona, okay, with those eyes. I was never at the Beacon this summer, so that is a total lie. And at Chris Birch's party, I was not kicked out, Ramona. So you gotta stop making stuff up to make yourself look better, Ramona. It's not gonna happen.
Ooh! And then, so Ramona claims that she was crazy, her legs were over her head, she got kicked out of the Beacon. Luann says she was never at the Beacon all summer, so it's just a lie. And then she says, you don't know what you're talking about. Stop making yourself look better by making me look bad. I believe Luann.
But, okay, because why would Ramona make that up? Like, she wasn't in a bad spot.
But I do think it's to make her look better.
How would that make her look better?
I don't know.
I do think maybe her memory is
not the best.
Yeah, who knows? We all have our moments.
Right, maybe it was just another tall
tail?
No, like another tall, short-haired woman, and she got a little confused. The other thing I wanted to talk about was her kind of like doubling down about Bethany and this, like, she is a child comment.
Oh, right. Luann's a big baby.
Right.
And Luann's saying, well, I am a big baby. I'm a child. And
right. I'm so happy I live my life like a child.
Yeah. I feel like maybe she misunderstood what Bethany was trying to say, which is just that Luann is super sensitive.
Right.
And she needs to be loved at her core. And so, and by the way, I have been rewatching some reunions, and it's so true. Whenever they go after Luann in the slightest, she's like, don't you guys like me? You know, she very much does not take criticism well.
Right. Like, wow, Bethany, wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. I just thought, I feel like Luann also, because really the only person defending Luann at their reunion was Bethany. So I think she feels like she has to just like double down with whatever Bethany said because they have to have each other's backs.
Yeah. One thing I was left with needing more was her talking about the kids in the lawsuit.
Right. I'm still confused.
I know. She's described it as like a little hiccup, but maybe if there is a next season, she'll be there and she can go into it more.
Right. Explain everything. Because I'm still confused if it's like a formality that like legally you have to sue to make that happen or if it was a little more contentious.
Right.
But overall, she seemed like better than ever. 51 days sober, 52 mm-hmm. as of this recording, presumably. Mm-hmm. And
good luck, Luann.
Yeah. Oh, can I just mention one weird thing? What happens on Wednesdays at Sonia Morgan's house?
What do you mean?
Because she was like, oh, does she have game night? I didn't know. Gay. She has parties. Gay parties?
Yeah.
I didn't know. Is this like a known thing?
She said it at the beginning of the season.
Oh, I must have missed that. I think this is the perfect time to segue to Eric J. Mack.
Hey, guys.
Hi. So wait, you could have been one of the gays on Wednesday at Sonia Morgan's house?
Yes, because I did happen to meet Sonia after Countess and Friends, hashtag Countess and Friends.
Right.
And we were talking, and I do believe I got an invitation to the Wednesday night gay parties.
How did she know?
I don't know
where
it is, so I'm not sure how to get there or where. So I have to figure that out. Sonia, let me know.
We have some follow-ups with Sonia.
So for our new fans, listeners, Eric J. Mack is of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills fame.
Yes.
The Daily podcast. Dish coverage of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills fame. Every week he brings us the most Erica Jane moment of the week. But we were like, let's keep the fun going.
Yeah.
We miss Eric. So even though Erica Jane's not on right now, you still
She's
have
still
things.
In our hearts.
Yeah, of course.
Always.
Eric, you handle the social media for Bravo.
Correct, yeah.
It's an important job.
It is very important. It's a lot of fun.
But yeah, so since you know so much about social media and Bravo Lebs, we wanted to bring word on the street with Eric J. Mack to
the
audience.
I like to think of it as word in the tweets.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I took a look. You know, there's been a lot of activity on social media around the reunions, as always. And it's always fun to, like, read what people are saying, but it's also a lot more fun to see what our talent is posting and sort of how they're interacting. One of my favorites, obviously, you know, the Giovanni thing was huge.
Giovanni!
My favorite was Sonia quote retweeting one of the GIFs of Dorinda saying Giovanni, and she just says Aflac, which I think is amazing. I mean, she's really leaning into it. She's having some fun. She's making it lighthearted because, you know, the reunion is so heavy and all of that. So Sonia Morgan, simple but effective.
Yes, as always.
We also got some great support from our girl Luann, who could not attend the reunion, but she's been talking about watching it on the Bravo Now app, and she posted last week on her phone being like, thanks, this is the best way to watch when you couldn't be at the reunion. So it's great that she's giving us a little shout out, you know, like digital support.
Do you want to know who sent her those links?
Who sent her those links?
Maybe me.
That was very nice of you.
Yeah, I know.
It's also your job. But one thing I have to say about Luann, too, is her hashtag game is on point. The post that she did where she was talking about BravoTV.com and the Bravo app, she has hashtag live it and watch it, hashtag namaste, hashtag never count out the countess, Hashtag Giovanni, of course. And then hashtag you can't turn your phone off, which I'm not really sure about that. But she did not include Rachel and I's favorite hashtag.
Yes. Live, laugh, Lou.
Words to live by.
Wait, is the you can't turn your phone off a reference to Carol forgetting to turn hers off?
Oh, you're right.
But that was in part one, so I don't know if...
That was in part one.
Maybe she's catching up.
Yeah, maybe she was only watching part one here. One of the other things, too, not reunion related, that I thought was really fun in social media was Jerry O'Connell, who's going to be hosting Play by Play. He commented, or he wrote a Yelp review. For me personally, I have to have either an amazing experience or a really terrible one to write a Yelp review. Yeah. But he wrote a Yelp review for TomTom, and he could not say, like, he said so many nice things. And Tom Schwartz reposted it on Instagram, and he was just so excited. He was like, when Jerry O'Connell visits and writes a good review about your plays, he gave it 5 stars, 5 full stars. Mm-hmm. Jax Taylor, he got involved. He replied being like, oh, I thought we had something special, Jerry. So it's really fun to see that sort of interaction. And it was really nice of Jerry to do that. We also had somebody commented on the picture and said, what about the pasta? And Jerry O'Connell replied and said, it's not about the pasta.
The perfect response.
He also wrote, P.S. Congrats, Lala, at the end of the review. So,
We wish you guys would leave us really nice reviews like that.
Yeah.
You can do it in iTunes. I didn't know if you knew.
Be our Jerry O'Connell.
Okay, guys, thanks.
Thank you, Eric. And if you guys see anything that we need to know, you're all very good about tagging us and stuff, but keep doing it. Tag me, Megan, Eric J. Mack, Bravo TV, using the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Thanks, guys.
And as you all know, every week we sit down with a Bravo celebrity or a Bravo exec, somebody super exciting, and get all the details from them about what's going on in their lives currently, any details about the show. And this week we talked to Gigi from Shaws of Sunset.
Yes.
Yes, she's so beautiful.
So beautiful.
And she told us what she's looking for in a sperm donor. Is his name Nima? Find out.
Guys, we are here with the one, the only, the Golnessa.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
This season is so good so far.
Do you like it?
I love it.
Yeah. Obsessed.
Everyone loves this first episode. I loved the first episode. I was laughing hysterically from the beginning to the end of it. We were funny.
Well, and also I feel like watching back, you're hearing Nima say so many intense things about you. What's going through your mind watching that back?
Honestly, I felt the same thing I felt when he did it initially. It was like everyone sees me thinking that I'm being giddy and whatnot. I was flattered by the fact that this kid had balls to do what he did. Not that like, oh, a guy like is into me or something like that. But the fact that like 4 hours ago you met me, you clearly know about my personality and how I am. You've been warned, but you still try to kiss me. So I had to give him credit for that. Is that weird?
No.
I'm not into him at that time. I was, like, not into it, but I gave him credit, you know?
By the end of the first episode, I felt like I was kind of in love with him. Yeah. Because, again, he was just going for it.
Right? Yeah, I kind of liked that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you know he was, like, so head over heels? Like,
no, I had no idea. I didn't know what was going on at all until that whole kiss situation. I was like, okay, we're out in the cabins in the snow or... like barely any snow on the ground that day. But, you know, so I don't know. I thought he was just taking a chance at it or he's new on this show and he was trying. But no, he was really.
Is that something that like when someone likes you and that is that something that gets like you attracted to them too? Or is it like,
what do
you look for?
Yeah, no, it if that were the case, I mean, I'm not stuck up. If that were the case.
I mean, oh my God, I love the confidence.
No, it was just his will. It was his persistence. It was the fact that he was dead set on the fact that he liked me and he was going to make something happen to that. I kind of just commend him on that. But I mean, you have to watch. You have to see what happens because you guys don't know if we end up hooking up or if we don't end up hooking up. You guys have to watch. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. we will.
Marry, stab, kill.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No.
Mike, Shervin, Nima.
Oh, every time I hate this one. Okay. I'll definitely marry Reza. Aww. Because he's like, you know, he's the best, like, house. I can't call him a housekeeper. What do you consider? Like, he can run a house. He cooks. He cleans. He's tidy. He's likes his house, you know, designed a certain way. Like, he's a perfect husband. And plus, he's gay, and I wouldn't worry about him, like, getting attached feelings to me. Right? Yeah. Mike, I would, you know, revisit that definitely with Mike, because Shervin's, like, my brother, and I can't have, like, any kind of incestual action, so I just have to kill him. Oh. Or stab him. We'll stab him. We won't kill him, right?
Okay, yeah, stab.
We gave you stabs.
Yeah. Stab him in the ass or something. Okay, yeah, that'll be good.
Oh, yeah, because that was going to be one of our questions. Like, do you think you and Mike will ever end up together one day?
No, we would never end up together one day, but I'm not saying that there may not be another one of those drunk turkey nights in another season in another country or tonight in New York City. Who knows? Right. Oh, you guys are like, oh, shit. You guys.
I know. Now we're like, oh my God, wait, is this going to happen? Is it going to happen today? Because are you on Watch What Happens together?
Yes, we are.
So who knows what happens after?
On the after show, we should just let it out. Yeah. Like, hey, Andy, you mind?
Andy would not mind.
Oh, he would not mind.
Okay, I have another hypothetical.
Okay.
You have to go to dinner with one of them. Shalom's ex-wife or Nima's girlfriend?
Oh, my God, Nima's girlfriend.
Really?
Yes. Oh, my God. It's like I can't emphasize that enough. I don't want anything to do with that guy that I, you know, married or anything to do with his, you know, before me, after me. I don't care. So, and I've met Erica, which is Nima's girlfriend, or was. Oops. So, yeah, and she's a sweetheart. You know, and I was scared to meet her the first time because he told her about what happened. And I'm like, well, why in hell would you do that? Because now every time I see her, I'm going to think in my head what she's going to probably be thinking. So it's just a little uncomfortable, but then it's kind of like boss bitch knowing like your man wants me.
Oh.
It was very Angelina Jolie.
Yes.
Ooh. It was very Angelina Jolie.
Right.
Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Smith situation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're following you. We're Jen Ann. Yeah. We know. We wanted to talk a little bit about your sister. How are you doing? What is your relationship like now?
There is no relationship. Yeah, no.
Okay. Next. Moving on.
How are things with MJ? I know you guys are kind of up and down this season. Yes. Is it always going to be one of those things where she's always going to be your girl at the end of the day, or a question mark?
I think it's been about 2 years now that I don't think she'll ever be that girl for me anymore. But I can't lie. When MJ and I are together, there's a level of fun that's had and that anyone's around us has from our energy that I can't put a label on that and I can't put a price on that. It doesn't matter what we go through. At the end of the day, we can still have those moments. Yeah. And that's what everyone loves, that we can just say, you know, F this for now. Let's just have fun right now. I mean, but, you know, she takes those below the belt jabs. And, hey, I'm Loch Nessa. I can bite right back. So I'm just trying to really just smoke a lot of cannabis and calm the hell down so I don't have to bite back. I mean, gosh.
In kind of the similar vein, we saw everybody kind of on the cast last season have issues with Asa, and we saw it end kind of not so well at the reunion. Where are you now with her?
Well, I didn't have any issues with Asa, you know, last season. We were very fine and cordial the way our friendship had been going for a couple years. We talk every now and then. We speak a lot through social media, or every now and then a text for a birthday or if we're thinking of each other. But it's kind of been that. And for me, that was how it always was. And we're comfortable the way we are. I wish her the best. And her son is absolutely adorable. Like a spitting image of Jermaine and Asa. He's just the cutest thing in the world. So I wish them the best.
Aww. Did you... I want to know what the worst fight you guys had as a group before the show started. Like, was it always dramatic?
No, from me and my life personally, I was a troublemaker and I looked for that. But we never completely were this tight until the show came around and it created this complete new bond because, you know, we're filming and we're doing all these trips together, which are fun, but we usually would travel differently or hang out differently. It was like one of us or three of us or, you know, two of us, never all of us all the time. So it changes. The dynamic changes. The friendships start changing. So, you know, when you, it's like, I don't know, I've never had a roommate because I know I would have, like, probably killed the person. But I'm sure you guys have roommates where you know there's just days that you can't handle it anymore. Yeah, so absolutely. Imagine that with a group of friends. So it's natural to have your bickering and ups and downs and want your goddamn space sometimes.
When Reza and MJ were here, I asked them who was the most high maintenance of the group. Mm-hmm. And they said Mike. But they said you were a close second. And
me? Oh, my God. I have never heard that I'm high maintenance. No, MJ is the most high maintenance person.
Oh, okay.
But Mike is high maintenance, too. Right. Now that Asa is gone, then that's different because she used to be the most high maintenance. But MJ, by far, is high maintenance.
What's high maintenance about her?
We're starting she's, the things that she expects of people. She's that's the problem, is she expects people to do things for her and have things like, you know, I was saying earlier, it's I'm on the same category as her. We are D-list celebrities, but she has an A-list celebrity personality where it comes off very like self-entitled. And why do you talk down to people? You're not really that famous, because I'm just as famous as you and I don't act like that. So she's high maintenance. I'm very bougie.
Oh, okay.
Those are two different things.
I think they did say bougie.
Oh, I'm bougie as hell.
They said you don't like white food.
I don't like white food because I was lactose intolerant and everything just happened to be white, but I eat rice. I mean, I eat sourdough bread.
I didn't know if you had a writer list and it said like no white
food.
No,
they just love to just throw me under at any chance that they get. I don't say that stuff, but they're in here throwing me under. Let's do it, baby. Oh, bring the questions. Yeah. Bring it. Bring it.
Oh, dear. I think we've just started another.
No, I'm ready for war.
You mentioned the show kind of like changing your dynamic with your friends. I imagine it changes dating. I asked Mike this too. Oh, like, you must get crazy DMs and stuff.
I don't. I have all that blocked off. I can't get DMs. I don't want the DMs. I don't want to see them. I don't want to read them. No, I'm not interested in that. And I've always had a hard time dating. I was never much the dater. I would meet someone through someone, a friend. If I felt comfortable, I'd kind of, you know, even Shalom, he lived in my building for 3 years before we actually started, you know, dating each other. That's how I feel more comfortable meeting someone. It's hard. You don't know what someone's motives are. Again, like Shalom, I didn't know, and he served me my own ass, basically.
Are you dating now?
No, and I'm not interested. I'm not interested in giving any false intentions to a man because I feel like I've said it in so many ways. I don't want a commitment and they think they're going to change me in the process. They fall in love and then they really see the disconnect that I just don't want that. But I want a baby. You know, I'm going to have a baby very, very soon. I'm going to have it in 2020. So next year, this time, you guys better get a bigger chair for me to sit in. This chair may not be as, you know, big as I need for next year.
Oh my God. I'd be so excited to see you pregnant.
Me too.
I know.
I want to do like one of those naked nude photo shoots. Like, I'm dying to do that.
Oh my God.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
I can't think of a better note to end on than a naked nude pregnancy photo shoot.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. I'm so sad that I had to end so early. I feel like we were just like getting in our groove with Gigi.
Yeah, the thing you don't get to see is while we're doing these interviews, there's usually a press person in the room giving us a 2 minutes, right, one minute,
huh, wrap it up,
and we're like, it just started.
Right, we just started talking about sperm.
Right.
So, yeah. But we also talked to Sezen Cavusoglu. She worked on, like, from second season on of New Jersey. Right. She was on their production team, not the Bravo side. She's since moved on to the Bravo side. She's worked on Real Housewives of Atlanta, Real Housewives of Dallas. So basically, like, every amazing show ever. She found something so profound and important to the Bravo universe. I'm going to let her talk about it. Well, Sezen Cavusoglu.
You got it.
I did it.
Sezen Bonus Cavusoglu. Points to Rachel.
Welcome to the Daily Dish podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So to start off, can you introduce yourself and say what you do at Bravo?
Yes. I'm the vice president of current production,
which means that with other vice presidents and directors and managers, we oversee the shows that are currently on our air.
So we know that you've been working on the Bravo side since 2015.
Correct.
But before that, you actually worked on the production side of things.
I did. I have been producing Bravo shows for 10 years now.
Wow.
So a little over 10 years, actually. So yes, I have been in the Bravo family for a long time, and I really cut my teeth on Real Housewives of New Jersey. It was when reality TV was starting to take off. You know, it was right after the table flip. So, you know, the world was never the same after that.
Right.
And that's when I started to transition from documentary into reality. And I'll be honest, like when I was first offered the gig, I was like, I'm not going to do that. I work on documentaries.
Right.
You know, it's almost insulting. But then I totally got bit by the reality bug. And you know, I never look back now, because once you get into it and you see how hard people work on these shows, which is what the general public unfortunately doesn't realize all the time.
Right.
Especially Bravo shows, they are not easy to produce.
I wonder why.
Yeah, right. Why are we number one? There's a lot of effort and thought and creativity that goes into making our shows. And I started that with Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Well, I do want to clarify for listeners, because sometimes when people hear that, you know, the Housewives are produced, they think, then it's scripted. I knew it. Explain to me the art of being a producer.
Yes, I can tell you the art of being a Bravo TV producer, because I do think that we stand apart from the other networks in our insistence on being true to what's real.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's interesting, there was a New York Times article about this just yesterday, and I was discussing it with some friends of mine who still do not understand how reality shows get put together. So a lot of people like to say to you, there's this kind of like gotcha mentality where like, why would you need to edit a reality show? Isn't it real? Why would you need to edit it? Which honestly frustrates me to no end. Because imagine, you know, we film for 16 hours on some days. How can I put even 1 hour of that unedited on the air? You know, we only have 43 minutes for our shows. So what goes into producing our shows is, like I said, a lot of thought, a lot of care. It all starts by us meeting with the women ahead of the season. We sit down with them and we listen to them about what is going on in your life. What are the big life events coming up? What are your children up to? What are you and your husband up to? Are you renovating your house? Are you starting a new business? So we get the lowdown on all of this. And then we prepare ourselves for what stories we will be following with them, where their lives are going to take us that season. So there's a lot of, you know, thought that goes into it starting at that point. And then as we film, like I said, some days we film 16-hour days if there's an event, and we film the befores and the afters. That's another thing. Bravo is really big into process. Like, we like to show process, like how do the women get ready for their events, you know, both the party side and the women themselves. So there's a lot of, some people may think, tedious details that go into all of this. So then we look at all this footage and we see, okay, what's the most entertaining parts of it? What are the most interesting parts of it? What is going to be relevant going forward? What do we need to take away from all this footage that we shot? And then we start to basically, you know, pare it down. I don't want to say we start editing it, because I think that there's, like, editing has become such a dirty word.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you start paring it down and you start, you know, putting music under it, and you start to add the interview bites into it. So it's just, it's a lot of work, but that's how you basically, you know, produce our shows.
Mm.
Is that helpful?
Yeah. No, that's a perfect explanation.
It's basically just like storytelling.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. That's the other thing. We don't just go blind, you know, into lives of these people who are gracious enough to let us film them, because I think that it's such a huge thing to open up yourself in that manner to cameras. And if they're letting us in, first of all, like, I think that a of that as a privilege that we get to tell these people's stories. And we want to do them justice. You know, we don't want to shortcut anything. And like you said, Rachel, it's storytelling. So we always want to make sure that our episodes have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, sometimes we have cliffhangers, so the end comes later.
To be continued.
Our favorite. But that's exactly what it is. It's storytelling.
So I know you worked on Real Housewives of New Jersey very early on. So what season did you come in on?
I came in right at the end of season one, beginning of season two.
Okay. So
it was very fresh, very different back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So season two reunion, that's when Andy gets pushed by Teresa.
Yes.
And Danielle's walk-off.
And he got the Tanner on him.
From Teresa.
Yes, yes.
It's so funny. I actually interviewed Danielle for a separate project a while ago, like a year ago. And she's like, you know, I was the first housewife to do a walk-off. And I was like...
Well, that's quite an honor.
Yeah. I just loved how proud she was.
Yeah, well, she should be.
Exactly.
She started the trend.
Totally.
And actually, we had the first no-show at the reunion on Jersey, too. Jacqueline Lerida.
Right.
Season 3 reunion was the first no-show ever. And that morning, we actually, you know, we tried to get her to the set that morning. And then we realized, and I think Andy made the call, and he's like, no, we're just filming. We're just going to go. Because we waited, and phone calls were made, and texts were sent. And then we decided to roll without her, which it was still a very powerful reunion, I think, even more so with her absence.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Reunion day is so tough.
It's so tough. It's so intense.
Yeah.
She knows what it's like because, you know, the reunion before that was the year, like, when Andy got the shove and walked off. So we know how intense those days can be, and she just could not do it.
You were telling us a story yesterday about, I think it's the season two premiere was the christening, or is it season three?
Season three premiere, yeah.
And how the night before you had been with all of them, and Teresa's like, I have to go to my...
Yes, we were in New York City. The women were in a play, Caroline, Jacqueline, and Teresa, and maybe Lauren Manzo. They were all in this play, in an off-Broadway play, My Big Gay Italian Wedding.
Oh, this did not make it onto the show.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys weren't around back then. You're 10 years too late. So we went to see the show. Then we all went out to dinner with them. It was the next day was the first day of filming. We were talking about it. We didn't say goodbye until it was, I think, 2 in the morning. And we knew that they were rolling really early the next morning. And Teresa was saying, you know, Joe, we got to go. You know, we have the christening in the morning. And you know, that was the christening.
So how do you start off a season like that and move on?
That was a tough one. That was a really tough one because nobody thought that such a big thing would go down that would determine the rest of, you know, the season so early on. You know, you usually build to something like that. It was tough. So we had to regroup and talk about, okay, so the worst thing that could happen has happened. How do we rebuild from here, basically? So the rest of the season was an effort to bring the Gorga family closer together. And you saw them, you know, try to make that effort. But yeah, it definitely, you have to pivot. That's the other thing. Reality shows, nothing is scripted. You know what I mean? Like, if I was scripting that show, I would not have given away the fight in the first episode. I would have saved it.
Right.
With reality, you just have to roll with the punches because these things get thrown at you all the time. You know, people get sick. People's pets die. There are other unexpected life events that we just have to roll with. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, you know, it definitely, but it forces you to be more creative in that way. And I feel like when we do, it's really rewarding ultimately because I think the audiences really enjoy being on that unexpected ride with us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
you know, one of our favorite things to do is obviously to interview the executives here at Bravo, because you guys hold all of these secrets.
And the vault.
Exactly. And Rachel was like, we have to talk to Sezen. Do you know she's the one that found footage of Joe in the vineyard talking on the phone?
We film really, really long days. And especially when we go on cast trips, all the cast is together, everybody's mic'd. So there is more than usual amount of footage to watch and more audio to listen to. Because sometimes somebody may not be on camera, but you know, you still have to listen to the audio so that you don't miss any details that are unfolding. Any conversations, you don't want to miss those little moments that I think make our show so unique also. So, you know, there's a similar example of that from Real Housewives of New York when Carol was talking to Luann's friend Barbara about the wedding. So,
hot mic moment.
Exactly. Yes. So, like, you don't want to miss those moments because that's when things start to get a little bit more interesting. So, season four, the cast of Real Housewives of New Jersey, they went to Napa. Again, really long days and hours and hours and hours of shooting. And I was producing one of the Napa episodes. And, you know, what happens when footage comes in-house to the production company is there are so many layers it goes through. We have people who are called loggers. They watch everything and they make little notes about what that scene is about, and as interesting things happen, they flag them for the producers so that the producers, when they look at the footage, it's easier for them to see, okay, this is where this lives, this is where that lives, and I know exactly what I need to pull from this. So, because again, if there's 3 hours of footage and you only need 2 minutes, you know, it's easier to do it that way.
Right.
I've always been really kind of anal about like wanting to know every single second of what was filmed. So I spent some time digging in to that Napa footage, and I found the audio of Joe Giudice on the phone, which was, you know, it was quite a discovery, to say the least.
I mean, talk about an iconic Bravo moment. Yeah.
Iconic.
Yeah. And can I tell you, like, I think we immediately knew that. We knew that, like, this was going to be something, probably. Yeah.
Right. Was it like finding gold, like, in California?
Reality gold. It was finding reality gold in Napa. Yes.
Yes. That's, like, one of my favorite stories. I'm so glad that you told it.
So I'm going to ask, does it ever feel strange that you're the one who is making the decision to include something in a show? You know, granted, it's all reality, but you're including something that could have ramifications on someone's relationship.
Yes. I'll just start by saying that it does. For example, that moment, you know, what do you do as a producer? You know, where does your loyalty lie? And where do your morals lie? So, yes, but at the same time, we have a job to do. And I think one of the best parts about working at Bravo is I love how true we are to what we film and the stories that we want to tell. If there was any part of me that even felt for a second that that phone call was planted, I wouldn't have even like flagged it to my executive producer.
Right.
But when you find real moments like that, and you know that that's going to help you tell the story in the best possible way, it's really not a question. It really isn't. You just have to do it. So I think that for us, you know, for all of the execs at Bravo, that's where our loyalty lies. It's right. Like it's we have to be truthful in the story that we're telling, and we have to put together the best possible show. That's what our audience expects from us. When we take shortcuts, they know we get called out. So yeah, those big decisions, it's, you know, it's a big responsibility. I don't think any of us take it lightly. I know I don't. There's a lot of conversations that happen. Some decisions are bigger than others, but we do the right thing at the end.
I I was struck by what you just said, too, is that you would get called out. Because I do think that if you weren't to include something and it were to come out on the blogs or on the internet, like Bravo would be kind of tarnished a little bit because you wouldn't be telling the truth.
I think we have such a good reputation because our shows speak for themselves in, you know, how honest they are and how authentic they are. And that's not something we take for granted at all. And there, because there are so many other shows that are lightly scripted or heavily scripted, depending on what you watch, I think that we really stand out in this really, really crowded landscape because of how truthful and honest our shows are. So I would not want that responsibility on me, and I don't think any other execs would. And like you said, right now, like, we don't produce shows in a bubble anymore. There's blogs, there's social media, there's all kinds of things out there for fans to express their opinions on, and Bravo viewers are very expressive, so they wouldn't hold back. And, you know, our audience is also really loyal, so that's not how you want to reward them.
Right. Are you ever the one personally fielding calls or frantic texts from Bravo Liberties?
Now we're getting to the juicy stuff.
Yeah. That are like, take that out. Yeah. That can't see the light of day.
That has happened. That has happened before, yes. And I will not divulge what, you know, decisions were made or who that call later. Was from. Yes. Yes, we'll tell you off the record.
So what do you say when they are like, that has to come out?
It really depends on the situation. A lot of the times, you just need to give them a moment to calm down. You don't maybe want to pick up the call right then. Maybe you're going to let them leave a really angry voicemail or two. And then you know, 12 hours later, you can check in with them, and it usually helps. I think that, again, I feel like it's a privilege for us to be able to film these shows with the casts that we do have. And I'm very, very honored to be able to tell whatever these women's or these casts' stories may be. So I want to respect that. So when they watch something back and it really frustrates them or it terrifies them, or they're sometimes mortified by something they said or did, I really want to respect that and give them the time to hear them out, but then convince them why it has to air.
Right.
Basically.
Right. Jersey has always been so fascinating to me because we go from seasons of pure joy and levity to sometimes more emotional, darker seasons, like
Absolutely.
Season four, I would say.
Absolutely. When Jersey first started, it was a comedy show. You look back at it now, you know, it was, I remember, again, before I took the gig on Jersey, they had sent me the entire first season to watch. And I remember thinking, like, I've never seen anything like this. Like, it's like, you want to be a part of that, right? And even in season two, the drama with Danielle, you know, obviously it was more entertaining than dark, I think. But when the family came into the picture, that's when things started to turn. And season four was very dark, very dark. I think that it even affected us working on the show. You know, you work in post-production, you're watching that footage all day, every day, you're in dark edit rooms. And I feel like, and we were a really tight-knit group too. We, like, all of us came back to the show year after year, and we would be in there for really long hours. And I feel like that darkness kind of crept into our lives too. It definitely, the air in our offices felt heavier. And we were all, you know, we were all affected by them. You're with those people day in, day out, it feels like, and you kind of feel their pain and sorrow, and you want the family to mend, and they just can't get there. So it definitely, I feel like it took a toll on all of our, you know, psyches and mental health that year, for sure.
Do you ever find yourself choosing sides? In terms of, you know, you're kind of in a room.
Like, no, of course not.
Well, you're kind of in a room.
Never.
Watching the footage. So you are a viewer of sorts. But then there's also this layer of, like, you know the ladies.
Yes. Yes, yeah. You definitely do. You definitely do. Not because you like one cast member over the other. I think just like in any situation, you're watching somebody argue their point of view and you feel like maybe the other person is doing a better job in defending what they have to say over right. the other. So, I mean, I really wish that you didn't, but you just, you know, you just get caught up in it. And
oh, we know.
Yes.
I was going to say on the flip side of it being so dark, you also brought us really all of our Melania moments.
A lot of Melania moments from early on, yes. Very early on, I feel like right away I discovered like what a gem she was, and she did not let me down. She grew up to be, you know, the wonderful, hilarious, such an entertaining person. And she was that way from, you know, age 2 and a half or however old she was when we met her. Just like the best one-liners. You couldn't script the stuff she said.
Give me pizza, you old troll.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's so many. There's so many. So I've always been a fan of Melania Giudice. Always.
Since you've seen it all from the beginning, what are your thoughts now that Danielle has come back onto Jersey? And what's more, she had Teresa be a matron of honor in her recent wedding.
I mean, who would have thought, right?
Right.
It's really shocking, but at the same time, we all like a good redemption story. Mm-hmm. So I'm very happy that they were able to put all that ugly past behind them and just, you know, come together in like a really nice, meaningful way. We would not have thought that, but I think that also shows growth. Like our housewives, they evolve through the years, and Teresa has definitely been through so much, and I think Danielle has been through so much, maybe not so publicly. And so years later, they were able to come together and say, what was all that about? That's what it feels like. And I don't know. I, as a fan, that makes me really happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Us too. What were some of your favorite moments working on The Real Housewives of New Jersey?
Oh, my God. There were so many. I was really proud of the episode that we produced in season 4 where Caroline Manzo's brother got married in Chicago. It was one of the very first gay weddings, I think, on reality television. Definitely the first one on Housewives. So I was really, really proud of that episode, Jamie Lorita's wedding. That was really fun. Season 2 premiere was held at the Brownstone. We all went. The entire cast was there except for Danielle. Andy was there. And Andy actually did a live cast. And back then, that was a big deal, you guys. This is 2009 I'm talking about. So, you know, there was no Facebook Live or no Instagram, nothing. So it was this like high production live casting that was going on in one room at the Brownstone. And, you know, Caroline and Albert were the hosts. It was packed. It was absolutely packed. And it was just such a rewarding night for us, the producers, who've worked really, really hard to bring the show to life. And just to be able to be there with the cast to celebrate it was amazing.
I know we're focusing so much on Jersey, but you had told us that after the...
That's exactly where I was going.
Okay, yeah. After the first posh, the second posh fashion show, the ladies were banned from...
The very first one at the country club. Yes, they were all banned from the country club. For life, I believe.
Is bitch better, that fight, right?
Don't call me honey.
I can't believe they were banned for life.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, they kind of crossed the line when they chased each other down the halls and, you know.
Oh, and Ashley grabbed Danielle's weave.
Yes.
She brought it to the reunion.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the plastic head. Yes. Remember that? The mannequin head. That was a crazy moment.
Yeah. It sounds like you're bringing me back to some interesting times. Yes.
I personally am always fascinated by how much housewives change physically over the season.
Oh, aren't we all?
Yes. What? I mean, you get a different point of view. You're with them. What is it that...
I think that when you watch yourself, I mean, I think that... as a society, we're so critical on women. I think we all probably know that and feel that and suffer from that at different times. And I think it's even more so when you're on a reality show these days. The bar has been, I don't know how or when this happened, but the bar has been raised so high in terms of how glam you have to be and how proper you need to look all the time, how much designer clothing you need on you at all times. So I'm sure that watching themselves back and watching the other franchises or other shows on other networks, I'm sure they feel a lot of pressure to look a certain way all the time. And, you know, cameras can be unforgiving at times. So, and if you watch yourself back for, you know, 18, 20, 22 weeks, and you think like, God, that wrinkle looks terrible, I got to take care of that. You know, you want to do something about it. And then you look at other women in your ranks who are doing it. So it's like, why not? I often feel it makes me sad. I don't think any of them need it. I think that we have, like, all of our casts are filled with really beautiful people in very different ways, colors, shapes, sizes, whatever. And I wish they wouldn't feel that pressure. Mm-hmm. But I also can't say that I wouldn't succumb to the same thing if I was on TV.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
we film like one video a year and I'm already like, I have to change everything about
me. Rachel, stop.
Next time you see her.
Okay, I can interview with the housewives. I can interview with you. That stops now.
Okay. Speaking of that, you know, you're on The Real Housewives of Dallas.
Yes, season 3 coming
up. Yes. I just watched the Super D's, by the way.
Isn't it amazing?
I just made like 19 gifts from it. I'm like obsessed.
I'm so happy with it. It's going to be such an amazing season. And I really hope that the people who found the show last season, I hope they come back. And I hope they bring a lot of friends with them. I really feel like Real Housewives of Dallas is one of those shows that has so much potential for growth on Bravo. So I hope that, you know, we continue for many, many seasons.
I'm a flush it, bitch.
Yeah. Well, Leanne was on the podcast at the end of last season, and it really sounded like she was not coming back. Are you surprised she did?
So, no.
You're like, she was bluffing.
No, not her personally. It's just I think that this is an issue we run into with a lot of our cast members on different shows. At the end of the season is a very tough time. You know, you take a lot of beating from everywhere. And sometimes I think it's easier to say, I'm done with this. I'm not going to do this anymore. But then, you know, why would you ever give it up?
Right. Yeah. I don't think I could.
We would really miss Leanne if we didn't have her. So I'm glad that she came back.
Yes. Yeah. So what was it like bringing a new Housewives into a world that has had like the same Housewives for a very long time?
You mean the starting of Dallas?
Dallas.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I think that Texas was always a really interesting place for us that we hadn't tapped into. And it all comes down to finding the right group of women before you launch any Housewives show. It's all about finding the right women with the right circumstances, right connections. And with this cast, in the beginning, we weren't sure. The cast was found and we started filming the show. The decision usually gets made after you look at a few episodes and you really feel like there's a Housewives show there. So there's a funny story. Real Housewives of Dallas was one of the first shows that was assigned to me when I started here as an executive. So my second week, I was in Dallas on set just to see, you know, how things were going, what the cast was like. I didn't know them at all. And when I go on set, I try to be as under the radar as possible. And this time I thought it would be easy. They don't know who I am. There's a large crew moving around at all times. I'm just going to be another crew person. However, the things that were scheduled the time that I was there, they were these, you know, kind of more intimate moments and their homes. So like everybody would be in the kitchen and I would be sitting in the living room by myself. So like I remember Stephanie's husband, Travis, kind of like came into the room, saw me, he left and came back. And I was like, I'm not intruding. I'm with the crew. You know, I'm not a stranger. Like, I'm really sorry. But like, I was still kind of refusing to give up who I was. And then, of course, not surprisingly, Stephanie and Brandy totally caught on to me. And the last day I was there, I was hiding in the van, and they came up to the van and they started waving at me like, oh, we see you, we know exactly who you are. And I just waved back. So even to this day, we always talk about this, and they like mock me about it, how I hid from them for the entire week that I was there. I just feel like when you make your presence known, it can put pressure on the cast, and I just don't want that. Right. I don't want them having to feel like they have to, especially a brand new show. You don't want them to feel like they have to perform for you, right, or impress you, you know. So that's how Dallas happened. It was all about finding the right cast with the right connections at the right time, and it's been a really, really joyous ride with Dallas. So that's why I'm hoping that more people will start watching the show this season. We're bringing back the entire same cast from season two: Carrie, Brandy, Stephanie, Deandra, Leanne, and Cameron. And so many surprises. I mean, you've seen the Super Tees, our cast trips. There were two really, really fun cast trips. So many hilarious laugh out loud moments, some great personal stories with Brandy adopting her son, Bruin, which we're really excited about. Again, like, you don't get to tell a story like that every day. The fact that they did it and it all happened so fast and they let us in on it, I feel so honored to be able to do this with them, for them to share this with us. We're going to see great stuff with Carrie and how she's dealing with her work, mother, you know, am I a businesswoman? Am I a mother dilemma from last season? She has found a great solution for herself. And I think, I'm hoping that it will inspire other women who are watching the show. There's great stuff with Stephanie. As usual, Stephanie and Brandy's antics are wonderful. you know, like, I live for the two of them just pranking people. Yes. It's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will you also work on one of my personal favorites, Flipping Out?
Love Flipping Out.
I love Jeff Lewis.
I know.
But he's so particular in the way he works on the show that I wonder, does it bleed over into how he is with you as somebody who works at Bravo?
He's wonderful. He's absolutely wonderful. And he's been in the Bravo family for so long.
Right.
And, you know, he's one of our original Bravo celebrities.
Yeah.
So I, you know, we all adore him, and I think that that love is mutual, and he has a really good relationship and friendship with everybody here, and I think that that's something also important to him. So, no, I mean, thank God, you know, he never turned to one of us and tried to fire us. That hasn't happened. You know, so we get along really well. We're really, really happy to have all of the Flipping Out family back on our air, season 11. Coming later this year. It's a really exciting season.
Yeah, and you know,
Jeff Lewis is like the gift that keeps on giving, because it's not, you can't put any person on camera and 11 years later they're still as entertaining and interesting and have new stuff to share with you. Monroe is like the cutest baby ever.
She looks just like Jeff to me.
It's amazing, right? But she actually also looks like a great combination of Jeff and Gage, because she also has Jeff's Gage's coloring too. So I don't know. I mean, I know, you know, Gage is not, you know, Jeff is the biological dad, but I feel like I look at her and I see like a perfect child that came from both of them. Aww. So yeah, so we're going to be seeing a lot more of Monroe. She's growing up, she's starting to talk, and she's very active, really smart little girl, and it's been such a joy like watching that and watching the process of Jeff becoming a dad.
Yeah. Well, because there's always drama on that show, is there anything you can tease about the new season?
Not yet.
Okay.
I think press will get really mad at me if I do that.
Oh, fine. Thank you so much, Sezen, for spending this time.
Thank you, guys. This was really fun.
Yay!
And like, you guys took me down on the memory lane.
Yes.
For sure. Thank
you. You're welcome,
you.
And we're sorry.
No, it was really fun. Thank you.
We are here with Quad Web Lunsford.
Yes, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. Well, I want to talk about, of course, Married to Medicine.
Of course. I'm in the Bravo building.
Yes.
Hello.
So we just had the premiere.
Yeah.
How has the reception of it been for you?
You know, it's been quite overwhelming for me. There has been
a lot of support from my fans. Shouts out to the Quad Squad. I love and support you. I love you guys so much for supporting me. How about that? So that's been really good. And then, you know, you always have those naysayers. You know, if some people just don't like you, they're just not going to like you. It doesn't matter if you give their mother a kidney. If they don't like you, they're going to find something wrong with that. So, of course, I do feel that there are some people who think or feel like, oh, she's in a vulnerable position right now. So let me just fire shots at her. You know, it's amazing to me because if people are true fans of the show and they've been able to kind of watch, you know, me grow from season one up until now, and, you know, then you would know I've always been a hard worker. I've always been very ambitious. And it's just amazing some of the things that I hear. Like, I'm floored. Like, I hear people say she's a gold digger, she's looking for a come up, and now she's got a come up. I'm like, I'm confused because in season one of Married to Medicine, I was still working as a medical device sales rep, as a medical sales rep. I was still working. They covered that on TV, just like they covered, you know, all the things that I did when I was helping my husband create his office and establish his office, you know, just like they filmed and covered when he was very nasty to me, you know, yelling at me in Barbados, screaming at me in the kitchen and rolling all on the floor in the living room. Like, it's amazing to me that you can see all of these things and still find something negative to say about Quad.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, because last season I feel like things really came out at the reunion that were kind of there all season and people were very confused about your relationship. Mm-hmm. Do you, now that even more of it has come out, do you regret not being more open throughout last season?
Well, you know, last season I was really still trying to work through the issues of my marriage. I was very diligent about wanting to try to see if we can get back on the right track. And I thought the best way for me to do that was to kind of just keep things localized between my husband and I. It's a shame that we are where we are today. I really hate where we are. But I knew that I could not continue to try to make the relationship work if he was completely not trying at all. And we saw his arrogant behavior, as we said on the reunion stage at in New York. We saw his behavior. You know, it was just very nonchalant. It was very dismissive. It was very, you know, misogynistic, egotistical. And I just said, this is not what you deserve, Quad. This is not it. And you know better. Why are you constantly, you know, going through this and putting yourself through such agony? Why are you doing that? At some point, I had to say, what's most important, the love that you have for your husband or the love you have for yourself? Mm-hmm. I had to really come to terms with that. And I did. And I made the decision and I filed for divorce, you know, after trying to work through it, even sometimes afterwards.
Wow.
I tried everything. I mean, we tried counseling. You know, that didn't work out. He got us kicked out of that. You know, I tried writing things down. He made a mockery of what I wrote down. I tried buying us books, thinking that he would get it because, you know, he's a scholastic achiever. So I was like, okay, maybe he can't receive the message from me, but surely he'll receive it out of a book. He never read the books, you know. I tried the marital focus group. We all saw what happened with that. I even tried to lead by example. It just did not work. And over a period of time, things just got very dark between he and I.
I can't imagine what it's like to watch all of this back again.
It hurts.
Yeah.
You don't want this feeling.
Right.
You do not want the feeling of being judged. You don't want the feeling of being criticized. Like I told you, the things that I hear people say, I'm like, wow, someone said that I was sterile. They said that I was sterile, and I knew that I was sterile, but I'm not. I'm not sterile, you know? And it's very interesting because I'm like, well, when did you guys go to the doctor for me? Because I most certainly didn't get that report. I didn't get that report, but I've heard people say that, oh, she's sterile. And I think the show led them to believe that my husband and I talked about a baby, having a baby, more than what we really did. That was not an ongoing conversation in our marriage. That was not something we woke up talking about. We went to bed talking about. We're talking about it over dinner, breakfast, lunch. It wasn't like that. And I've even heard people say, oh, well, she knew she didn't want to have a baby at first. She should have told him that. Well, who told you that I didn't want to have a baby? Right. Now, that's the tea. Who said that I didn't? Because I do.
I think that was very clear watching this show.
I guess some people need glasses, I suppose. Because I'm just going through and just kind of thinking through some of the things that I kind of read that's out there on the internet, and I'm floored.
It's crazy to me that as a woman you have to like go out there and say something like I'm not sterile. Like it's that is bananas.
Oh yeah, it's the weirdest thing, because here's the thing: had I had the baby immediately, as soon as we got married, what will people say then? Then they will be saying, oh, look at her. She's a gold digger.
Right.
Sis is securing the bag. Oh, she's securing her coins now. Oh, honey, Miss Squad is trying to keep her coins in the bank. If I would have had a baby immediately, right? If I would just be a stay-at-home wife, then they will call me a kept woman, okay? Because I was wanting to be more of a team player with my husband and working and trying to elevate not only myself but us, I'm still being judged.
It seems no winning. It's a catch 22.
No, it's no winning. Right. It's no winning. And you know what's really funny? Society truly does have us brainwashed. Like, I mean, and you know where the criticism really lies, where it really comes from? Women. I've heard people say, well, all he wanted was a baby. If she would have had a baby, then she still would have had her man. If there were challenges, sis, just listen, those of you who have said that, because I know it's a lot of you. If indeed a baby would fix problems, why are there still so many issues in relationships? Why are there still so many single parent homes with mothers that are now raising the children by themselves? When you find those answers and you stop looking at criticizing and judging, when you come back down to earth and be real, then talk to me. Because I would love to hear those answers.
Yeah, even if you had a child, the issues would still be there.
Absolutely. The issues were looming. And again, like I tried all that I could do to try to, you know, let's fix this. Let's fix the problems. You know, and it just didn't work out. It just didn't.
I think the fans would be really interested in, like, the timeline. So the reunion happened, which was very emotional and very hard. Mm-hmm. When did you start filming, and when did everything else happen? And then when have you filed for divorce, I think?
So, of course, while we were in New York, my husband and I were still married. We were still trying to work through the issues. Even after all of that has happened and so much more has even happened. God, you just find out so much. But anyway, so that was in December, and I believe that we began to film this season. I feel like we began to film in March.
Yeah, it wasn't that long after the new year. It was like February, March, I think.
I feel like it was probably, yes, it was March 20th.
Okay.
It was March 20th when I believe we started to film. And then a couple of months after that, I decided to file for divorce. And shortly after that, I relocated.
Where are you now?
In my own beautiful place.
Wow. Yeah, because I have to say, watching it, I was so mad that you moved into the guest room. I was like, you should get your room. He should move into the guest room.
But you're talking about someone who is, it's... He wasn't that type of man. It was like, you know, and I think this was probably what kind of drew a wedge between the two of us, because it's like, it's whatever I want. So whatever. Whatever with your feelings, whatever with what you need, Quad, it's only about what I need. I don't care. I married you. You're my wife. You should be happy that you're married to a doctor, or you should be happy that you're married. So with that being said, you are here to serve me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't.
So he wouldn't, you know, this is a person where people were thinking, you know, we're only talking about the trash. You know, I tried to protect my husband all season five. I had so many people saying so much mess about me. Oh, the trash. She could do this. She could do that. That man is this. And that, I mean, it was horrific, horrific, the things that people would say. And the whole time, I took it in silence, because I really was trying to protect my husband. I was trying to protect my marriage. And I thought that I was doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want people to look at him as if he was not a good physician. I was thinking about that as well. So in a sense, I still was putting my husband's feelings before my very own.
I hadn't thought of it like that, but the idea that you were protecting him even through all of that is very upsetting, is the word that I'm thinking of. And very brave of you, I think, and like reveals your character.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. When I was watching the premiere, I couldn't help but see the parallels between last season's premiere and this season's premiere.
Yes.
But I know that you and the ladies have not been getting along necessarily. We saw that flashback at the beginning of the episode. Did you and Jackie have any kind of like bonding moment over this?
Yeah, Jackie has definitely been one of the women who I can say from the beginning was extremely supportive. And I truly do appreciate her for that, and I'm grateful. Yes, because she's walked in those shoes. She understands. She understands getting people on social media blaming you when the man has, you know, truly been the person to betray the relationship or the marriage. So she was definitely, she called me and she would say, hey, you know, baby girl, if you need someone to talk to, you know, I'll be there. You can call me, you know.
And I have to gather that maybe the other ladies didn't offer that support.
No, you know, here and there I would get a call from, you know, Heavenly actually was supportive as well. You know, I think after New York, this is what happened. They learned about the cheating, and everybody at that moment was like, wow, like they couldn't believe it. And, you know, and then to hear what he would say and then looking at his body language, you know, I think everybody at that point had an aha moment, like, oh, this is what has happened, you know. And, you know, so in at that moment, I felt like people had discovered, and then there was a little bit more of a heartfelt feeling for Quad. As time progressed, I wouldn't hear from some of them at all. You know, it wasn't like they were calling me all the time saying, hey, you know, I'm just checking up on you guys. I know New York was a lot. You know, is there anything that we can do? You know, sending me over, you know, Bible scriptures or words of encouragement, any of that. It wasn't like that, you know. And Contessa, she would you know, chime in and say, man, you know, just let me know if you need me. I know you're strong, you know. But not so much from the others. Not so much from the others at all. You know. And granted, some, you know, some of them have their own things going on too, you know. But when I did come back to Married to Medicine for season 6, you know, to me, it was baffling, because I'm like, why are they acting like I did something to them? They knew that I was going through crap. They knew it. We saw that in New York. So regardless if I've reached out to you or not, just when I come around, why not embrace me? Why not show empathy? Because I can't tell you how to handle your business. I can't tell anyone what they'll do in whatever situation. Right? So who are you to tell me that I'm wrong for not telling you, and when to tell you? You can't tell me that. I have to deal with things on my own. But as a friend, what you can do, you can be warm. You can be loving. You can be understanding and compassionate. You can say, you know what? I've missed you.
I'm sorry. I'm so sad to hear that, because I love you guys as a group.
You can say those things. And when you're ready to speak, just know I'm here to listen. See, that's what I would have done. But you'll see, Married to Medicine, season 6, episode 3. You'll see. You'll see how they treated me. It was very selfish on their parts, the way they treated me when I came around. And I wouldn't have done anyone like that.
Do you think there's any opportunity to move forward with them? Or has this been like a, I see you now, and that's what it is?
For me, and I know people like to say, oh, you know, Quad is never forgiving. She'll ride it out 5 years and not talk to you. You know, we're human. We make mistakes, meaning including me. But I am very big on owning your mistakes and truly taking accountability for them and apologizing authentically, not just for damage control, not just because the look is great, but really mean it. And if I feel that, then clean slate. Easy. It's very easy.
Okay, I think that means there is some hope.
Of course.
Good. I think we have to wrap up. I'm so bummed out. I would talk to you all day. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yes.
And I look forward to watching the season. And
yes.
Wish you all the hope and happiness.
Yes, everything. Of course. Listen, life is challenging in terms of the arena of the personal life, but it's very good professionally. I want everyone to watch Sister Circle. Again, that comes on every day at 12 o'clock noon on TV One. I actually have my cookbook. It is available for pre-order. You can go to Amazon.com to today. It's Cooking with Miss Quad. Live, love, laugh, and eat.
Yay!
Yes. So follow me on Instagram, all social media platforms at Absolutely Quad.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear.
Okay, so now it's time for Rose and Thorn.
And this, of course, is a nod to the New York ladies discuss their roses and thorns in Mexico.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Megan, what's your rose?
Okay, so even though it was sad, my rose is from Shaws of Sunset, because after MJ's dad died, to see how Mike and Reza were so there for her, I mean, it they are family.
If me and Reza are around, we're going to make sure we take care of her.
I'm so into it.
Because I promised Shams on his deathbed that to the day I die, I'm going to protect and love her. I want to make sure she's okay.
Ugh, I could cry talking about it.
Sobbing at my desk. I was
so
sobbing.
Sweet. And what Mike says about promising her dad that he would look after her. Oh my God, Rachel's tearing up.
No, but it is. Like, honestly, he was like on his deathbed. And now me and Mike are twin flames. So right. I just feel so connected to him.
All right, let's change the subject. Rachel, what was your rose?
Oh, my rose is this week on The Real Housewives of Dallas. They do a pageant and Leanne raps.
That would be my thorn.
That made me cringe so much. Okay, what was worse, though? Leanne's rapping? I still don't understand what Deandra did to that K-cup.
She just picked it up, I think.
That's all she from the. It drops out of her. She doesn't pick it up. I don't understand what happened. I don't understand what she did. But apparently, it was good enough to win. I would have went with the rap. Sorry, Brandy. Sorry, Deandra.
But she picks it up with her cheeks and holds it there.
On the opposite end of the spectrum, what is your thorn of the week?
My thorn is watching on Below Deck Med, the finale, how Hannah is throwing herself at Conrad and is like, you mean to tell me this whole time you haven't had sex or a blowjob? And you're turning it down now?
Just trying to sleep.
Have you really got 6 weeks without sex or a blowjob?
Hannah, no! No!
Take off my pants, baby.
It's like, no, take off your mic pack. I will say I went ahead and watched the reunion. They talk about it in detail, so. Yeah. What was your thorn?
Well, my thorn was also Below Deck. Joao telling Casey that if she hadn't gotten up, he would maybe not be with Brooke right now.
Oh, Joao.
And there's so many levels to why this makes me mad. That's disgusting. Poor Brooke. And I feel lied to, personally, because I totally believed everything he said when he was sitting in that chair you're currently sitting in, Megan. And it just makes me so mad.
I mean,
but you watched the reunion.
Ugh.
Ugh, okay. Her eyes say it all.
I can't say more than that.
Yeah. I just was like, even if that's true, you're on camera right now. Like, don't say that. Just out of, like, the kindness of the world,
right.
You know?
The only thing, no, I shouldn't even defend it. I shouldn't. But if I was going to, but I'm not. But I'm just saying if I was, is it that he just didn't want to make Casey feel worse? To be like, no, I wouldn't have said that to you. Do you know what I mean? Like, if she said, would it have been me? No, it wouldn't have been you.
Like, but that would have been better because then she could move on and then
yeah,
he's just perpetuating
you're right.
Wow. It took me all season to get it right. Now I'm so mad.
Men.
Ugh.
All right. Well, we want to know what your roses and thorns were this week. So whether we talked about the show or didn't, tell us what you loved
and maybe made you cringe a little this week.
Yes.
You can always tweet us at BravoTV using the hashtag BravoDailyDish. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Meg Segura.
You can find me on Twitter at Rachy Robb and me on Instagram at Suspiciously Small.
And you can find me on Instagram at allday_Nikki.
Oh, my God.
D-E-I.
Oh, God, Megan.
Right. She's still trying to create a little mystery. You can't find her.
Wow. That's Nicole. It's a big day. D-E-I. Google
you
her.
You are yelling.
All caps. No. She's yelling.
Yeah.
Have a great week. Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy. Miss me. Kiss.